Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome, everybody, to another issue podcast. Now, this is a commentary on the October 2017 issue. Hopefully, you've listened to a few of these podcasts by now. The aim of the game is, if you haven't bought this issue, is to stop listening to this podcast and go out to your newsagent or supermarket and buy the issue. Because what we're going to do is we're going to try and guide you through the October issue, give you some behind-the-scenes revelations, maybe, and basically talk you through it. Kind of a DVD commentary, if you know what we mean. So, now this is an important issue for us. On the cover, you'll see issue 1106. Now, it's the first time we've put this on the cover, and there's a very good reason for that, because this is a refreshed issue. It's a redesigned issue, has some new features, has more pages, has some new regulars, new writers. I would say it's an evolution. I'm looking at the gang around me. We've got Damon Cogman, who's our art editor.
Hello.
We have Lyndon McNeil, who's our photographer.
Hi there.
Simon Aaron, features editor.
Good afternoon.
And Joe Dunn, deputy editor.
Hello.
And I'll introduce myself. I'm Nick Trott, the editor of Motorsport. So, I'm looking at the team now. I kind of think it's an evolution, but these guys have been here much longer than I have, so they may see it as a they may see it in another way. What do you think, guys? Does it feel like an evolution, or does it feel like we've taken a bold step, Damon?
It's always going to be a different perspective from different people. Some people that have been around far longer than we have been buying this magazine for many, 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 many years. And thank you to all you. But some of them are going to feel as though it's a sharp left turn. Others are going to feel like it's a sort of a easy left, I think. So I think it's not necessarily a huge shift. I think it's updated. It's got some new fonts. It's got some new looks. It's got some new content. But it's still at the heart of it. It's still motorsport. It's still everything that we love about motorsport in there.
I agree with much of what my esteemed colleague Mr. Cogman just said. The core of the magazine is essentially unchanged. It's the same range of features covering contemporary Formula One, historic topics, the authoritative columns, which have become our trademark. It looks a little bit different. I know for a fact that some people aren't so keen on the new look, but the vast majority of the responses I've heard have been very, very positive, which is encouraging. Personally, I've been reading this since the 1970s, and I worked for it in the early 90s and returned here a few years ago. It's been through all sorts of different phases, and you often hear people say, oh, it was way back, way better in the old days, and so on and so forth. But if you actually look at an issue from the 1960s or the 1970s, when there were very few photographs, the features sometimes got to page 843 and then continued in a smaller type size on page 723. You know, I think it's a much, much more polished product. I know I would say that, but I think it is a much more polished product now than it was then. And it's been a more polished product for many years. But yeah, I think evolution is the word. It is strikingly different in appearance in parts. But if you take it for what it is, a magazine, and read it, it's the same thing.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, I think it's I think the word you used was refresh, and I think that's absolutely right. It looks and feels a lot fresher, and that could be because obviously we've been working on it for years. But I like the new look of it myself, and I think that one of the key changes for me, which I think works really well, is the running order and the fact that readers are sort of welcomed into the magazine at a slightly different pace, and then continue to read through the features and then into the back section, which I think we'll talk about a bit later. But generally, I think it looks a lot fresher, a lot more modern, and it's been a real pleasure to read.
Excellent. That's going to be a good appraisal, Joe, in next time round. I mean, we are, yeah, Joe's right. It, it, it's the refresh is was very much in the word refresh very much in our minds as we went through this process. Please get in touch. editorial@motorsportmagazine.com. Just let us know. You know, we're happy. We've received a number of comments so far, and Simon's right. The majority have been very favourable. We want to hear the good and the bad. You know, we feel like it does feel a personal relationship with the reader, and we'd like to know what you think. So get in touch. For those that haven't got the issue in front of them, I'll give you a quick overview of what we've done. So as Joe mentioned, we've changed the flat planning and the order of the issue a little bit so that hopefully it's got a more relevant pace. Some of the advertising that you see and the classifiers that you see at the back of the magazine has got a new editorial that's very much related to that environment. We've added another section at the back, and we'll go and talk about this a little bit later on, called Garagista, which is kind of the realities of running racing cars by the people who own them. The key, and I really want to make this point, is we've tried very hard not to thin out the magazine. Motorsport is known for its depth, it's known for its authority, and we still have, and we will have, 8 to 9 features in every issue, and there'll be weighty stories. And Damon and I had many late nights trying to work out how we're going to maintain the same level of depth and words without them falling off the page and being cut. And I kept saying to Damon, no, we're not going to lose that. We're going to keep that. So we haven't sacrificed anything. All of the columnists are now together, have got the same number of words. Most of it is still there, and we've added these two key new sections at the back. But I suppose economy and efficiency is something we looked at, wasn't it, Damon, in terms of the layout and the design?
Yeah, there was a lot of tricks of the trade used to make sure that all of the words that were there before are all still there. So the word counts are the same, and in some ways they've actually gone up in some of the areas. We've shifted fonts to make them a little bit more open, to make them a little bit more legible. We've sort of reduced the size of the columns to allow bigger type area. So we've done lots of little behind the scenes stuff that you won't notice, hopefully. And to a lot of people that have mentioned about type sizes, and I know this is a hot potato, but actually the type size is actually bigger now, surprisingly.
This is the main body copy. This is the main feature. All the regular body copies
is actually all bigger. Yes. Surprise, surprise. So we listened and we made it bigger. So it's not smaller. Definitely not smaller. We definitely made it bigger.
So what we're going to, this is a slightly awkward email, isn't it, that we're going to have to.
Yes.
We have actually had a few, haven't we? You know, a few people have said, I think you've made it smaller.
Yeah. So whenever you change something, it is the instant thing is it's changed and I don't like it. As human beings, and we do kind of shift to that. But the reality is the type size and the type shape, which is actually the much more important thing, because you can actually have a very large type, but if it's a very compressed type, then it becomes sort of trickier to read. So this is actually a very open and very round font that allows us to kind of make it a little bit more legible, make it easier to read, which is kind of what it's all about, really.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, it's funny. God, we went around the houses, didn't we? On fonts, trying to pick the right ones and working on various sizes. But and also you look at the relationship, don't you, between fons and the serifs and the sans serifs and the block types and how many versions you've got in a font. Days, yeah. You know. And it's, but it was an enjoyable. I personally enjoyed it. Damon, you might think you never want to do this ever again. But.
Well, the joys of font selection are the building blocks to any magazine. It gives it its personality. It gives it the its feel, its look. So it's, while can be a little bit nerdy, it is phenomenally important. It is the calling card of the magazine. And over the years, the font choices in motorsport haven't always been for those reasons. They've been to get as much copy on the page as possible in the past, which we are still aware of. But the personality of the font makes sure that you are engaged and you can be you can read it with pleasure as opposed to sort of squinting.
Good stuff. Okay, right. Well, let's Well, actually, I was going to say let's dive in, but no, let's tackle the cover. Because there's nothing more precious, is there, really, than the cover, the green. Oh, I'm too close to it. I can't. I've got cover. Joe, I'm just going to hand the mic to you.
Well, maybe we start off and by saying, I mean, the key thing I think most people will notice about the cover when they look at it is that the motorsport masthead, the word motorsport, is a lot smaller than it was before. We've also got our the date that we were established up there, established 1924, and the kicker, the original motor racing magazine, which works really well in that top bit. But I think the key thing is going to be the size. So maybe Damon could talk about and indeed Nick. Well, because just to give some background, listeners may not know that Nick and Damon came up with this redesign by locking themselves away in a warehouse somewhere up in Cambridgeshire, I think.
A remote bunker from...
where they were insulated from the rest of the office, and they would sit there most Fridays together and come up with and presumably discard lots of plans and ideas. And it took a long time for them to come up with what they've come up with here. So they are obviously the best qualified people to talk about it. But Damon, talk about the size of the motorsport, because I know that the actual masthead is obviously one of the key things.
Yeah, I mean, we were conscious of... we went through many iterations of the cover and indeed the logo. We went down some fairly revolutionary paths and some fairly terrifying paths, but
no red.
Definitely, there was never a red anywhere near any of this. Ultimately, we came back around to the green masthead being again the heartbeat of what we have here. The green itself is actually the same size, if not a little bit deeper than it used to be as well. So the actual green area is a fraction deeper.
There's more green.
There is more green. You are getting more green for your $4.99. It's amazing. And there's a little bit at the bottom as well. there's more green than it's ever been in the past. So we with that in mind, we actually reduced the size of the logo to actually, and rather curiously, to actually make it more striking. For those of you who've got more than one edition sort of sitting on your coffee table or your shelf, if you put them next to each other, you'll notice that the older logo, while being sort of substantially larger, is actually lost within the green block, because what you're doing is you're competing. Everything is competing with each other, and by reducing the size of the logo within that green, it just allows it to breathe a little bit more, allows it to sort of be just a little bit more legible, just a little bit more friendly, and a little bit more distinctive, I feel.
Yeah, and we looked at the sort of the depth of a cover. All magazine covers have got a kind of a 3D effect, haven't they? You look at a cover and they're kind of layered. And with the really large motorsport logo, it was very hard for the subject matter, the key image, to actually leap out of the page, wasn't it, Dan?
Yeah, yeah.
We kept looking at this thinking, well, actually, the priority is kind of a little bit skewed. We're selling the brand, but we're selling that subject matter this month, and yet that's tucked behind almost the...
Yeah.
The logo.
Yeah, with the way that the logo is now in sort of a little bit smaller, it stops competing with the fact that you've got this lovely, beautiful orange McLaren in front of you as well. So your eye goes to that. Your eye isn't kind of bouncing around between logo, between large type, between sort of orange cars. What it's doing is it's got a hierarchy now. So you see the orange, you see the car, you see being Bruce McLaren, you see the logo, you see them as separate entities, and it just allows you to, your eyes to sort of basically to work it all out in a much more organized manner.
You mentioned the logo. Can I ask, I mean, how aware of the history of the motorsport logo were you when you came to redesign this? Obviously, it's one of the most famous in publishing, certainly in motor racing publishing. How much could you mess around with it? How much did you want to mess around with it? And where did you draw the line?
There was there was a lot of creativity to try and change it, but actually what we found was motorsport has a character and a distinction all of its own that is like nothing else on the newsstands, and to do away with any of that would be madness. So we are hugely lucky that we have this 100 odd years of history to kind of fall back on. But equally, it still is a tricky thing to deal with when you have a big green block at the top. So creatively, it is a tricky thing.
Yeah, I mean, we ring-fenced it pretty early. We had a look, you know, and we thought, you know, in the very early days, we thought, well, what if it was justified to the left? What if it was, God, even what if it was vertical? What, you know, you have to go through all these sort of processes. What if we've got the lovely M logo that Damon designed that's used elsewhere in the magazine and is used on the digital channels as well. We looked at that. You know, there was a number of things, but ultimately, it's a fantastic logo. It works really well. People listening to this will probably be the only people outside of the building who, I'll say this, we did actually look at moving away from the green in its current format. You know, we looked at repositioning some of the green. We looked at a much brighter and whiter cover. You know, we really pushed it, because sometimes you have to, don't you? I like to think the Gilles Villeneuve approach, you know, you've got to exceed the limits, haven't you, really, to find them.
And we did find ourselves spinning off a few times, I'll say.
Yeah, we dragged ourselves back to the pits, didn't we, on three wheels on a couple of occasions. So, but there was, in terms of, the history, the other things like the key lines left and right, you know, they were very much a nod to the very unique motorsport covers of, God knows how many years
there was. Into the 60s, where it had the white sort of vertical lines down the side.
Yeah.
For all of you people with lots of back issues, you'll know what we're talking about here.
So the key lines, and we thought, well, actually, they can serve a purpose, these key lines. We can actually use them to enhance this 3D effect. So you'll see that they're kind of asymmetrical. You know, the ones on the right tucked below the wing at the front, one on the left at the top, you know, is much higher. And hopefully that, again, there's a visual, there's a trick of the eye, it pulls the car out a little bit more.
Yeah.
So we really, we wanted to be faithful to motorsports design values, because they're very high. You know, Damon and the team have done a great job over the last 15 years or so. But we wanted to take things forward, and hence that's why we got the fluoro colour on there, the slightly modernized blockier fonts. There's a few things that, you know, there's some things that we had a conversation this morning, didn't we? There's some things that we're not sure about.
It'll evolve again.
Yeah.
Hopefully not too much, but it will certainly keep getting better and better, definitely.
Yeah. I think, have we hit the midway point in this podcast already? We're getting nodded. All right, okay. We'll carry on. Lyndon didn't even get to talk about how we did that shot. Go on, Lyndon, have your moment. Go on, tell us.
Do we give away our secrets?
Tell
them everything we did.
Tell the truth.
Basically, we had a day at Donington where obviously Dickie was able to drive the McLaren, and he wasn't driving it at that point.
Who is the handsome fellow there?
I believe it's our editor, Nick, yes. The Stig Dickie. I was stood up a ladder and four young gents were pushing the McLaren as fast as they could to make it look like it was handling it at speed. So, but we had many, we had three or four different ideas on how to do the cover, and sitting in our field in Cambridge and planning how it worked, and we were going for rear shots, head-on shots, and it just seemed to work. With the big side on telling us that it's Bruce's car.
Yeah, I think that was important, wasn't it? Hopefully, Simon, you feel the same, that seeing Bruce's signature and the old McLaren cars logo, it's wonderfully evocative, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't really think you can go wrong ever with an orange McLaren on the cover, but the fact that this particular M6A was the one that Bruce raced and was slightly shorter than the others because it was Bruce sized, and that just adds a little, it just personalises it, and I think it's a lovely car, and orange and green I think always are quite complimentary anyway on a magazine cover.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll leave you, I'll leave the listeners to have a good look at the story, but the Dickie's where he talks about why this is Bruce's car and how the owner found out that it was Bruce's car. It's just that lovely stuff that we didn't know this as we embarked on the story. We thought the car was significant enough before we found out some of these little tidbits of information. But I think you'll love the piece. It's very weighty, and Doug Nye has done a wonderful recollection, very personal actually, because Doug knew Bruce, And that, if that doesn't bring a lump to your throat reading that story, I'm not sure what will. So enjoy it. Bruce would have been 80, I believe, this month. His birthday, I think, was. we're looking at Jack, who knows these things. He's connected to the internet right now. But McLaren had a little celebration, didn't they, themselves at Spa, where Fernando's overalls, I believe, were the true papaya orange colour. So
yeah, not the slightly
yeah. And I'll be honest, we didn't tie this issue with an anniversary. The cover was a cover because it's a good story. So, and it is an exclusive. No other journalist has driven this car. It frightens me to think how much it's worth. But the owner was happy for Motorsport to drive it. And Dickie, you'll see a video soon of Dickie driving the car, and he really drove it. So keep an eye out on our YouTube channel and also on motorsportmagazine.com. And in the next month or so, you'll be able to see a wonderful video of this car absolutely flat chat, butterfly valves flapping around and everything. It's just a glorious thing. So I also must plug Barnes & Noble as well. So on Barnes & Noble's Facebook page, you'll be able to see a short video that we've cut together, which shows you a little bit more about what we're doing with the refresh, some of the content that we're doing, a few hints on some of the content and subjects that we've already shot that you'll be seeing in some issues going forward. So to all of our American listeners and readers, have a look at the Barnes & Noble Facebook page and try and find and search our video on there. So moving on, guys, where should we go to next? Somebody give us a Simon's grabbed the mic.
Well, I suggest you can keep hold of the mic as well, Trot. I suggest we start at the back, in the manner of Japanese magazines. Some of the news sections at the back were presented to the rest of us as sort of a fait accompli. And I think it's really nice to break up the advertising that's traditionally been a solid block with some very strong editorial content. And I'd just like to ask you, what was the kind of the genesis of that idea? Where did that spring from?
I think it was kind of twofold, really. I'd spent a long time looking at the universe of motor racing, and a long time looking at what transactions are tethered to the industry. What people, what do they do? What do they buy and sell? What are they interested in? The advertising in the back of the magazine reflected this kind of energy in dealing and trading and buying and driving and selling and everything else, more than the editorial did. You know, we just didn't have the editorial there. And I thought, well, actually, there's clearly an interest from the commercial audience there for this. So let's see what we can do on the editorial side. When I started to look into it, and Damon and I looked at it quite closely as well, and we started to poke through the adverts, and we started to see some really interesting cars for sale. We started to see some really interesting characters emerge. We thought, well, there's probably a section here that will help us break up the back of the magazine and also just reflect the activity that's happening anyway. That's kind of where Speed Shop came from, and we thought that it would be a good opportunity to absorb the auction content that was already a spread in the magazine into Speed Shop, to give our readers an idea of what's out there, really, and to become a bit more of an authority on anything that's transactional, anything that's related to the buying and selling of racing and performance cars, and do it in a way that was easy, you know. It was nice to look at. It had an expert tone of voice, good images. I think Damon's done a really good job with the layout. The initial suggestion of pink on a green was
what's wrong with that?
But that's kind of where it came about, really. It was just to better reflect the advertising that was already there, and actually to say to our readers, well, there's a ton of things happening in the back of this magazine that should be editorialized, you know. So we kind of extracted some of it. And
well, the great thing about this is that you get to the end of the features and you get to what is
traditionally the end of the magazine, you get to the classified section and you cannot choose to either go down that path or not. But with this now, you get the best of both worlds. So you have editorial going all the way to the back of the magazine. You've got Speed Shop, you've got the Garagista, and you've got Garagista.
I is plural, but A is what everyone knows. When you say Garagista, people know that you say Garagisti. People aren't quite sure.
Do you have to say it with an Italian accent, or are you okay to just do it?
I'm going to blame Simon. Look, Simon's going, he's got this look of innocence on his face. I thought it was the perfect name for it. I love the idea that we've reclaimed an insult. This was Enzo's insult, and we've kind of reclaimed it and said, you know what, that's actually a good thing. If you're, you know, if you're building cars yourselves, if you're spending a ridiculous amount of money, you know, trying to bring cars to life and be competitive, then let's reclaim that word. He's grabbed the mic again, I'm in trouble.
No, not at all. I also, just from a purely personal point of view, it's the chance to get for us to get our teeth into something a little bit different editorially. Just we chat to these guys a lot, and it's usually about, was the car understeering through Redgate on lap three or something? But to actually sort of find out a little bit about the process of them getting the cars ready for competition, where they found it, why they wanted it, it just adds a slightly different dimension. And it's actually, I mean, I covered the story on Jeff Gordon's Alpha Sud Sprint Coupe, which is being prepared, which Dickie Meaden will be racing hopefully later this year. And it was a slightly different element to the usual thing we do with drivers and racing cars, and I enjoyed doing it.
Oh, good to hear. It will grow. I mean, this section, we've launched with three cars. We have the Jordan 195, which will be, and we'll follow the restoration of this car over 6 months, hopefully leading up to the point where we'll drive it. And the second one is rather selfishly, it's a story of the MGB that belongs to Ed Foster. Yep, we got married last week. I want to announce it now. You cut that out, right? So this is Ed Foster's, who was our online editor until recently, digital editor until recently. He's moved on to Goodwood. He and I are racing this car this year, and we've had some very entertaining adventures with it. So we thought, well, that's a good one to share. And then there's the Alpha, as Simon mentioned, the Alpha Sprint Veloce. And again, we're following the story of these cars. It's a diary. So come back, you know, next month to see the next instalment, find out, you know, how badly we damaged the MG, or how much a V10 Peugeot engine costs. Or
or indeed how Nick overtook under the safety car at Alton Park last weekend.
Simon. Damn you.
See, I wasn't going to berate. I was just going to say it's great that we can actually follow a car from rebuild through to track test, rather than just turning up and seeing a car at a track and shooting it as it is. We're getting behind the nitty-gritty. I've saved you there, Nick.
Yeah, thanks, Linda. God, that did save me. It did happen. I think I'm going to have to save that one for... tune in, I think, in probably a couple of months. I will tell the story of how I inadvertently, Simon... overtook someone on the safety car at Horton last weekend. Yes, so that's definitely, taking my train of thought way off. So the point of this is definitely living with competition cars is the flag, and this is diary. I'd love to add to it. If you've got a really interesting car that you think we should follow, then please get in touch.
Definitely.
Yeah. And hopefully you'll enjoy, Lyndon's done some lovely shots here of the Jordan, and... you just don't see this stuff in bits, do you? Were there. So
what's to turn up? I mean, well, I found the Tour de Force where it's being returned from a show car back into a race car, and just seeing it there in pieces in front of you like a big jigsaw while it's all being tested and verified as to what parts were bits of cardboard for the show car and what were actually genuine. But yeah, seeing it from that stage and going back every month to watch it be built, it'd be amazing to do like a little time lapse over, you know, a camera up in the corner of the workshop and see what the boys get up to over the next few months. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting story to follow from start to finish anyway.
Fabulous. Well, as I say, it's a diary element, so come back next month, because they'll be very interesting to find out certainly the next step of the Jordan. I know the owner of the Jordan 195 has found a way of getting some more reliability out of the Peugeot engine.
It's called Cosworth, isn't it?
Very good, kind of very sharp. Without actually compromising on too much horsepower either. So that's all fascinating stuff. So are we going to continue to work our way backwards now, Simon? Should we? It looks like Joe's hovering over a spread. He's identified something here. So what are we looking at, Joe? Go for it.
Well, just talking about the Garagista thing, I was going to say that it actually is indicative of a slightly, well, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think that the magazine has a slightly more technical and engineering bent to it. And I'm not sure whether that's deliberate or whether that's just a fact of the features that we've got this month. But as well as the Garagista, we've also got a wonderful piece looking behind the scenes at JD Classic. And their preparation of the lightweight E-Type before Goodwood, which goes into some detail about how that's all done. And we've also got a great piece by Nigel Rees, which goes, essentially, he looks at why a car was unsuccessful in period, but is now successful in the historic racing scene. And Nigel Rees, for those who don't know, is a genius engineer who analyses a car's performance and actually improves it and works with some of the great sort of cars that are on the historic scene at the moment. The one who you're looking at the moment is the Arrows A4 in this particular feature, and it goes into quite a lot of engineering and technical depth, and I think it's a really rewarding read once you sort of, but you have to have your thinking cap on.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We as you do, I suppose. I met Nigel at Donington. I think it was the day. Yeah, it was the day we tested the McLaren actually. And Dickie introduced me to him, and within about 30 seconds, my brain was aching from him describing how he uses a piece of software that he designed to analyse the performance of historic racing cars, with the aim is to get more performance out of them than they've ever had. Took a bit of a flyer on it and commissioned him to write a story. He's not an author, a writer, a journalist, you know, by trade, but he had a good story to tell, and he'd been there. You know, he's actually generated performance out of this Arrows A4 that was never there in the time, and it did hurt, didn't it, guys? When the copy came in, we really there was a lot of elements that we had to go through and actually think, well, will our readers know what that does? Do they are they aware of that point? But we've kind of granted the readership with a high level of assumed knowledge, which we should, shouldn't we? You know, we should expect our readership to, you know, to understand a number of the elements in this. And but I think Joe's right. You do need your thinking cap on, and you probably need to read it twice. If you do, it'll be tremendously satisfying, because I don't think there's a more in-depth story about the sort of transformation, or how to transform the performance of what was an average car in period. The team here might not be pleased to hear, because they're the ones that have to tidy up everything when it goes onto page. But there are two to follow. So we've commissioned Nigel to write two more stories on two cars that again didn't work in period, but have found performance in modern times. So there's another series here, and that's one of the themes that you'll see emerging over the coming months or so, is that there'll be content that hopefully you'd like to come back to, you know, and follow. So and Joe, you're right. I'm personally fascinated by the technical side. I know that our readers, you know, they're happy to invest that time in a story to find out more. I suppose most importantly, just not to sacrifice anything else. So I hope that with the Bruce McLaren story and maybe with the Bertolini story, we've been able to explore the personalities as well in the sport. You know, I don't want to sacrifice anything to have more technology or to have more people. So, but I think actually you and Simon guide me better on that. You know, it's trying to get a balance in the issue, and actually that could lead us on to pyromaniacs. That's if we're talking about balance, over to Lyndon.
Pyromaniacs. A very wet Saturday. Was it Saturday, Simon?
It was a Saturday,
yeah. A very wet Saturday at Santa Pod in July, yeah. Eventually the rain stopped, and I think about lunchtime, mid-afternoon, they let cars go back out on track or on the strip. And we just kind of wanted to document an event that I've been fascinated for a few years with, which was Dragstalgia, and the characters behind it and the cars behind it. I mean, everything's modern. Oh, that weekend was very modern. not at Centipod, but the rest of the UK. And I just wanted to get behind and see the faces and see what was going on. And
it was British Grand Prix weekend.
It was British Grand Prix, yeah. So it was the alternative events.
Yeah, it formed part of my alternative British Grand Prix. Been to a zillion British Grand Prix over the years. I've missed the last couple. And this year, I just thought it, in the way the British Grand Prix always used to hog everything that weekend in the UK, there'd be nothing else on. So this year I decided to find a couple of things that were on that made for alternative viewing. Dragstalgia was one, and the other was a motorcycle clubby on what I still consider to be the finest Grand Prix circuit in Britain, but it's in Kent. And yeah, that was it. And the Dragstalgia thing is just, I mean, I think Lyndon's done a cracking job with the photos, and it's just a wonderful thing to behold because, as Lyndon said, the people in it, they are characters, and they're not like your modern-day circuit, young circuit driver who turns up with a physio and a manager and a box of vitamin pills. And you know, these are people who are steeped in the real world. That doesn't mean that this isn't done seriously. It is, and the level of preparation that goes into this is extremely high. And it's, in some ways, I think we had a discussion in the office, it's a little bit like the Goodwood Revival in a straight line.
Yeah. Yeah.
In terms of, you know, the prep that goes into the cars is rigorous, and I mean rigorous. You know, they are very, very different from many of the things we see in conventional UK motorsport, and it's all the better for it.
Yep, and that's why it's there, I think, you know, to give some, again, to try and show the sort of breadth of motorsport that we have in the UK. To give Lyndon his shots the room to breathe, and they are magnificent pictures. Page 98-99, and I think tell us the story of this shot, the opening shot. There's a guy, if you haven't got the issue in front of you, I'll describe it briefly. There's a guy sat in the roll cage surrounded by a fireball. There's an enormous engine, and the guy is giving the V for victory sign. So what's happening? He's on fire. Yeah.
It's they were talking about it all day, and they were building this hype of the flaming burnout. And I'd never seen, this is the first time I'd ever seen one, so it took me by a little bit of surprise to start with. And they said, basically they do the burnout but with flames, and every time I've seen a shot like this, I thought it was engines exploding and it's all gone very wrong.
And you were right.
No, thankfully no engines exploded. In this, basically some bloke turns up, douses your tires in fuel, and then just sets them on fire and walks off. As you're on flames, you do the burnout, and in theory the flames go out by the time you've left the start line. But it's the most impressive and warming start shot I've ever done.
So does the fireball kind of remain, and the car drives away from
the fireball goes up. So as the tyres expand with the burnout, they shoot 10 feet in the air kind of thing. Yeah. And then the car just disappears off as if it was going to do a normal burnout. And then the flames just slowly die out. The car, not damaged at all.
I think now we've got a videographer on board. I think next year, Dragstalgia, should we do a
2018? Yeah, we're there.
Should we all go to Dragstalgia 2018?
It's an amazing event. It's fantastic. The people there, like Simon says, it's Goodwood without the fancy dress because everybody's in period as it is. It's an amazing couple of days. It's.
Well, you can't have a greater contrast, I guess, than the flaming burnout to the picture on. Oh, look, Damon, you've dropped the numbers off the page again. did we talk about this last month?
No, we didn't.
Page, what page is it, Dave? 80-81. Okay, so on page 81, there's a picture of a wonderfully contented Nico Rosberg, his wife, and young daughter. The War and Peace headline, and this is a Mark Hughes interview, isn't it? Isn't it, Joe? This is a lovely story, as ever, from Mark. Trying to get to the kind of the root of how somebody who has effectively been in battle for so many years has managed to switch into a contented life. I thought it was a cracking story.
Yeah, absolutely. And Mark, as ever, has done a great job. And I mean, I think the great thing about Mark is that he's obviously trusted in the paddock, and he managed to get this interview with Nico. And he Mark is very clear that, you know, Nico is extreme. He's relaxed. He says that he's never seen him quite so relaxed, and very, very happy not to be in the fight. But he gives some great sort of insight into what it was like as a frontline Formula One driver. And he comes away as well with a great scoop, I think, where he obviously talks about his retirement, and he says, and so Nico Rosberg then reveals, all I'll say is something about how he came to make that decision. So buy the magazine and find out about it. But it's a lovely interview, and it's actually followed as well. But you can get two more different characters. A lovely interview by Gordon Spice, of Gordon Spice, and by Simon Aaron, which is our lunch with. And as I say, you couldn't get two more different characters, I think.
Damon, it's the wind up, isn't it? Oh, it's the. We can't end it now. Can we? I'm looking over at Jack, who's our online editor now, and he's giving me the guillotine sign. Really? Says it's my call. Should we carry on?
Yeah.
Hey, we're carrying on. There we go.
Well, no one ever listens to Jack anyway.
we To be fair, I did ask him to tell me when we got to, what did I say, 40 minutes? Yeah. Where are we at? 42. Right, okay. Another 10 minutes, chaps, I reckon. Okay. We have to, really, because Simon has done a beautifully deft story on Jerry Birrell. Now, this is page 112. So you can do the page numbers, Damon. 112. This, to me, is one of my favourite stories in the issue. It's tinged with it's not tinged with sadness. There's considerable sadness in this story. But it's beautifully written, beautifully shot, and it's a story that, to me, kind of epitomises or characterises the love of racing, really, from the author Simon, and also I think Jerry himself. So tell me how this came about.
It was a stroke of luck, really. The motor racing documentaries seem to be quite fashionable at the moment, and received an approach from a chap called Alex Shaw, who is busy making, or in the process of trying to produce, a documentary about Jerry Birrell. Jerry was a successful Scottish racing driver in the 60s and 70s. I saw him compete in Formula 2 in the early 70s, finishing second to Niki Lauda at, you'll be surprised to hear, Alton Park. I was, you know, because I'd seen him race, he died in 1973 in a Formula 2 accident. But anyway, Alex approached me, said he was doing this documentary thing, and as part of that, his stepsister, Cara, who is Jerry's daughter, was driving her dad's old Ford Capri at Donington Park, and didn't want to go along and have a look. I went there along with Lyndon, not really knowing what to expect, because I knew that Cara would be driving the car. I knew that Jochen Mass, who was Jerry's Ford teammate, and they also shared sports cars together, would be there. But I didn't really know what we were going to get from the day, and it was a delightful surprise to find that Alex's mum, Margaret, Jerry's widow, and Jerry's brother, Graham, and various other people who'd worked with him in period were around and about. And it was a chance to, over a series of casual conversations in the paddock and over lunch, to build up a little bit of a picture about what Jerry was like, which I found very rewarding from a personal perspective, because it was stuff I didn't know before. And as I say, because I'd seen him race, and he lost his life about a year after I saw him race, I guess. You know, it was interesting from a personal perspective, and I just, you know, it was a great range of people to meet.
And Jochen Mass too.
And Jochen was brilliant. He's a very articulate individual, as Jochen, and his insight into what it was like racing against Jerry, racing with Jerry, and what Jerry was like as a bloke was lovely.
Yeah, great story and great shots as well, Lyndon. I think you did a fabulous job. Okay, so let's jump into, I think we mentioned the Bertolini story. This is Andrea Bertolini, Ferrari test driver. I spent a day at Fiorano. Great, great fun, lovely character, and played probably a bigger role in Schumacher's 5 world championships for Ferrari than maybe, well, certainly a bigger part than I expected. And to spend a day at Fiorano was a spine tingling kind of moment, really, especially when they fired up the 412 T2, the last V12 Formula One car. Wow, what a thing. Simon, I don't know whether to go backwards or forwards now, having we started in the cover, went to the back. I think, to be honest, what do you think, Joe? Do you think we've covered most things?
Yeah, I think so. I'd be interested to know. I mean, having worked on this now for months with all of you, I'd actually find it interesting to know what everyone's favourite bit of the redesign actually is, if you can pinpoint just one thing. So maybe put the editor on the spot first.
Ooh. So my favourite bit of the October 2017 issue, it's so close to it for so long. The bit, I guess, that will stay with me forever was driving the M6A around the paddock at Donington, which, you know, I didn't wring its neck in the same way that Dickie did, but literally sitting where Bruce sat, and I don't know, I just managed to go into a different world, really. And it enabled me to have a good look at Dickie's copy when it came in and make sure that kind of feeling of I don't know, just wonder, I suppose, of being near that car came across, and it did beautifully. I'm sorry, Joe, but a really predictable one for me. It's the cover story. You know, it took a long time to pull that together, but and I was there on the day of the shoot, and that's it. Just that car to me has an aura of something I can't explain. It's a wonderful thing. Damon, go on, save me here. Go on.
Favorite bit of the magazine. As the designer, I love the new font. I love my new font.
So, Lyndon.
It's called Sanomat. It's beautiful. I love it.
Which one is this? Tell it. Which page is it on? And which?
It's on quite a lot of them.
I know what it is.
It's the main headline font. So sometimes it's used in italicized form, sometimes not. But it's the main feature headline font. Being Bruce McLaren, it's that font. So you're seeing the lighter version, the heavier version, and the medium version in that heading there. And then, so the many variations. I love that font. Sanomat, buy it. Sponsored by Sanomat.
So for me, I love the font. I think it's...
Oh, my goodness me. 6 months into this, and the only thing you like is the font.
I'm normally the most critical person of my work. I love the cover. I think it is fantastic. I think it's a real retro feel, but also very modern. And there's a simplicity about the magazine as well now, with the way that Damon's designed it. And I just think it's just such a nice read. It's visually good to look at. And my favourite thing's the whole thing. Sorry.
Works for me.
Some would say there's a simplicity about Damon as well. I believe there has been some. I hate to say this, but the body copy font is all...
Oh, my goodness me. Joe, what have you done?
I would just say that I wear a pair of 8 quid off-the-shelf boots plus one specs, and which aren't always the most efficient. But I do find that the body copy is easy to read, and I think it's a great thing. In terms of magazine content, I think as with Linda, I'm very pleased with the way a lot of it's come out. And I love the new features in the back. I think they're a great addition. But the one spread that sticks out for me, with your headline, Nick, War and Peace, is the opener for the Rosberg feature. I just think the intensity of the portrait on the left is such a contrast with the relaxed, happy family guy on the right. I just think it's a stunning spread. I think it's really, I quite happily have that on a frame somewhere. It's just a really striking pair of images, and I think it works really well.
Excellent stuff.
And Joe, so you haven't, you asked this question, but
yeah,
you haven't answered it.
You haven't dodged the bullet.
Well, I mean, I've never been an enormous fan of crossheads, but the font that the crossheads are in this particular... No, I think you guys have covered all, and then content-wise, what I actually, the small thing I really, really like, and sometimes it's small things that make all the difference, especially on redesign issues, is the track side view, which is always one of my favourite elements of the older magazine, which we've now expanded. This is Mark Hughes talking about a particular corner at one of the Grand Prix that he's writing about this month. And we've expanded it into slightly, so it's got more words, and it's actually got pictures showing how the various drivers tackle a particular corner and how their cars, the different teams have set up, affects how they take that corner. And Mark writes about it, and then our pictures sort of show it, and they show the car as it takes on the corner. And it sounds like you won't be able to see the difference, but it actually works really well. And I think it's just a really lovely small little kind of treat for Formula One fans.
Thanks, Joe. True, and there's a number of ways you can contact us. Of course, you know, there's the Twitter channel. There's Facebook. Very active on Facebook. There's the website itself. editorial@motorsportmagazine.com is the email. Take a look at our Instagram as well, because Lyndon spends a good amount of time kind of curating it, I have to say. There's some great content on there. The opener for the Pyromaniacs feature, the Flaming Burnout, is on the Instagram page, so take a look at that. But if there's nothing more from the chaps here, who are looking a little bit tired because it was a long process and I buggered off on holiday, didn't I, at the end?
Splitter.
There'll be continued evolution, but nothing dramatic. I really hope you enjoyed it. We tried very hard, as I say, to put more into the title without sacrificing anything. Joe's absolutely right. There's a technical, there's kind of greater emphasis now on the technical elements. We've really tried hard to kind of listen to what you want, to expand certain areas, not to sacrifice anything. And you know, I think it's a good stab. The team have done a great job, and we will continue to evolve, but we won't lose the green. Is that right?
Yeah, no green.
Sorry, what? No, sorry, hang on, no. More green.
So there you go.
Even more green.
Yeah, a little snapshot of the life in that room in Cambridge with Damon for the last... More green, less green, what do you want? It's been a very enjoyable process, I have to say, if not quite drawn out. But more to come. We've got a fantastic issue coming up next month that involves an interview, a very in-depth interview with one of the sport's greatest names, and it's going to be a cracking piece. So please tune in next month. This is the issue commentary for the October 2017 issue of Motorsport Magazine. Thanks for listening.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.